Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Every April, a black train rolls through upstate New York, cloaked in fog, adorned in black crepe, silent as death, as is everything around it, as it slowly inches its way north to Albany. It never stops. Clocks are said to freeze, and lights flicker as the train passes on by. An imposing engine continues its forward march, trailed by 9 black cars. If you look carefully, you may see the flag-draped coffin in the second to last, containing its revered occupant on his final trek home. The year? 2025. But the train? Well, that was destroyed in a fire in 1911. After Abraham Lincoln was assassinated in April of 1865, his funeral train, dubbed the Lincoln Special, embarked on a journey from Washington, D.C. to Springfield, Illinois, retracing in reverse the campaign trail that had lifted him to the presidency. It made 13 major stops along the way, allowing people the chance to mourn, to say goodbye. Crowds gathered along the tracks, bands played dirges, soldiers stood at salute. People wept openly. It was, at the time, the largest public mourning the country had ever witnessed. But even though the sorrowful event finally came to an end on May 3rd, 1865, numerous sightings of the train have been reported in the years since. Stories spread of a spectral vision of the Lincoln Special appearing during April in multiple towns along the original route, in places like New York City, Albany, and Hyde Park. Witnesses told of a ghostly locomotive emerging from the fog, draped in black, moving without sound. People claimed that their watches froze, realizing that they were behind 6 to 8 minutes. Once the train had passed, as if time had stopped. Some said the air turned cold, a hush fell over the earth, and a strange darkness lifted as the train disappeared from view. Others claimed they saw uniformed skeletal figures on board, motionless, eyes cast down, as if they were still standing vigil. But the most unsettling reports described glimpses of the coffin itself, lit faintly by the yellow light of dim oil lanterns. These accounts cannot be confirmed, and none have been explained. But the sightings continue, even into recent years, of a train from another century, forever bound for its final destination. So, If you ever find yourself trackside in Hyde Park on a misty April night, keep your eyes peeled, and you might just catch a glimpse of a ghost train. Don't forget to reset your watch. Welcome back to the Paranorm Girl podcast. I am your host, Kristen. Today, we're stepping away from the stationary haunt, the old woman in the hospital, the child in the abandoned house. There is something so universally eerie about a haunting on the move. Ghost trains, haunted planes, spectral carriages. We've all heard a story or two of a haunting that doesn't necessarily revolve around a particular person, per se, but more so about their modes of transport. These ghosts differ from our traditional ideas of a haunting. Rather than it taking place statically, tied forever to one spot, the apparition we see is intrinsically mobile. The ghost we witness is a liminal space in motion. The phenomenon of ghostly vehicles equally stands astride the line between urban legend and true stories, more so than any other ghostly topic this season. And whether urban legend or thought to be true, there are a few distinguishing categories of this phenomenon. To explain what I mean, I will use the ghost ship as the example. When we refer to a ghost ship, historically, we may have been talking about a real physical vessel that had been abandoned by its crew at one time under very mysterious circumstances, or one that had not been abandoned at all, but continued to sail as its entire crew lay dead and decomposing inside of it, found mid-sentence in their journal, mid-bite in their meals. Very, very eerie stuff. And finally, we may have been referring to a very literal ghost ship, one that appears and disappears on a whim, one whose appearance strikes fear in the hearts of sailors who see it as a sure omen of doom, because it should no longer exist. But just like the human apparition, we continue to see them all the same. Today, we are putting our focus only on the final category. We are exploring the mystery of phantom vehicles. So, the most well-known phantom vehicle type, and probably the one that pops up into your mind first, is the ghost train. Like Lincoln's funeral train, ghost trains have been prevalently reported. Accounts of ghost trains have been reported worldwide from places like Canada, Japan, Sweden, the United Kingdom, and of course, here in the States. Most stories are chalked up to local folklore and urban legend passed down through the generations, but there are numerous firsthand accounts from people who are certain of what they experienced and have no other way to explain it. They speak of old-looking trains traveling on defunct tracks or in places where tracks used to exist but no longer do. They don't always see a train, but many describe ghost lights coming right at them, the unmistakable sound of metal on metal of the wheels against the track as it closes in, a rhythmic whipping as it passes by, and a rush of wind as it goes. Like the following. Reddit user BioRogue tells a story from his childhood about living in a remote area of Texas. And he notes that his town was very, very small. And there used to be a train at one time that had gone through it. But years prior to his experience, the line had been discontinued and the tracks taken out. So he and his buddy were wheeling their bikes down the path where the tracks used to be when they suddenly heard the whistle of a train coming from behind them. Now, this was very strange, as the closest running tracks and trains were located many, many miles away. They think, okay, this is weird, but they continue walking their bicycles down the path. And I would do the same. You know, you're not going to immediately suspect, oh, there's a train where there should be none, right? But they hear the whistle again a couple of minutes later, only this time it's gotten closer. And they think, huh, this is really weird. and they go to pick up the pace a little bit, you know? But soon they hear it again. Even closer this time, followed by what sounds like the rhythmic rumbling of tracks. Dude, they start booking it, all right? Logic goes out the window at this point. So same, dudes, same. I'm right there with you. So they're now booking it, okay, down this path as the sounds grow closer and louder, and they run until it sounds like it is literally right behind them. At that point, they both drop their bikes and jump to the side. Now, the craziest detail, he said they felt a huge gust of wind and the sounds of a train whipping past them. These two kids experienced it. I mean, what could possibly cause a shared encounter like this? Though they didn't see anything, I imagine if you were standing by this path with eyes closed and this same thing happened, you would be convinced it was a train moving past you. It's a very distinct sound and rush of air. And that is the thing. Whether you actually see the train or not almost doesn't matter. The sound, the pressure shift, the movement of the air around you, it is so specific. It's so known. And while a story like that is spooky enough on its own, it is far from the only one. There is another ghost train story out of Kentucky, and this one is based off of an historical event that took place in 1890, and sightings are ongoing. On October 22, 1890, at 4:40 a.m., freight train number 22, having just left the station at Sloan's Valley, entered a tunnel headed northbound. Having waited at the Sloan's Valley station for the southbound passenger train to pass that they knew left Cincinnati at the same late hour every night, it hadn't occurred to them there might be another. An additional train that had left late due to a freight collision earlier that day that had held it up behind schedule. But there was passenger train number 5. As 22 neared the end of the tunnel, number 5 was entering from the opposite end, headed right toward them. There was no time to react, and both trains collided. 7 crew members died. Multiple cars were destroyed in the fire. Miraculously, all passengers on the number 5 survived, though some were severely injured from the collision. Soon following the wreck, reports began emerging of strange bobbing lights along the tracks, often at the northern end of the tunnel. People described these lights moving irregularly, swinging back and forth like lanterns, and we're edging back into ghost light territory here. Could they be a residual of men rushing to the rescue in the dark? Maybe. People also say the sounds of panicked cries and wailing can be heard echoing. A residual of frightened, hurt passengers, maybe? I mean, maybe. There's one very interesting encounter from a Don Brake from 1978 who had heard the legend of the ghost train of Sloan's Valley Station while he was interviewing somebody whose relative owned a business or a restaurant along the tracks. His curiosity was piqued, so Mr. Brake decided to visit the site one evening. And as he trekked through the tunnel, nothing too out of the ordinary happened, nothing that he reported. But then, in the darkness, he suddenly heard his name called. He continued walking toward the north entrance. You know, what are you going to do? You only got 2 ways to go. But he continued walking decidedly with a bit more pep to his step. almost to the end, he reported that he suddenly felt a cold breeze hit his neck, and he heard the unmistakable sound of clacking metal wheels on a metal track behind him and growing closer. Dawn began to run faster still when he heard it, the wailing of a train whistle. He turned to look and saw a single headlight shining at him from the south end of the tunnel, headed quickly for him. He turned to continue running to his exit when he saw a lone bright headlight coming from that end too. With not much choice, he flung himself against the wall of the tunnel as a blast of air rushed by him, followed by the sound of an explosion. This is how he described his experience. After all was said and done, he would exit the north end of the tunnel completely unharmed because, you know, encounters with ghost trains be like that. It's a pretty crazy story, but no crazier than the story from Reddit or experiences of ghost trains suddenly appearing as people are crossing tracks, barely turning in time to realize their certain demise, only for silence and empty darkness to follow. Or the ghost train outside of Bowling Green, Kentucky, reported by many. According to local lore, in the early 1900s, a passenger train had derailed when it took a sharp curve too quickly, resulting in the death of several passengers and crew. Ever since, many have claimed to see and hear this train. Those who might not see it still describe hearing the distant sound of the engine whistle, the clanking of wheels on track, the screech of brakes. Those who do see it have reported a fully lit passenger train rushing down the tracks, only to suddenly disappear right in front of their eyes. Much like the ghost train phenomenon, there are just as many, if not more, sightings and encounters with ghost cars. This part of the ghostly vehicle phenomenon utterly creeps me out. I don't know why. Perhaps it is due to the variety of other road ghost stories like phantom hitchhikers or unexplainable creatures that are seen along the sides of the road as your headlights quickly pass over and you're like, what the hell was that? Haunted towns that people pass through only to discover that they haven't existed in years upon returning to find them again. Have you guys ever heard those stories? Just so weird. So there's a lot of weirdness to be encountered out on the open roads, in deserted areas, in the middle of the night. So let's just add to our horrific road trip the possibility you may also encounter a phantom car. Okay? Route 666, renamed in 2003 to Route 491 due to the connotation with the demonic, has had its share of eerie reports from drivers. Phantom hitchhikers, darting shadow figures, fiendish black hellhounds, skinwalkers, UFO sightings, and some of the meanest ghost cars one could encounter. One seemingly hellbent on leaving living drivers at the very least scared out of their wits, and at the very most, dead, driven from the road, and killed in mysterious accidents. One car, one ghost car in particular, has been linked to at least five deaths. A black vintage Pierce Arrow Roadster is notorious for terrorizing other drivers. It is said to seemingly appear from nowhere, charging right up behind you. Its dark headlights suddenly turn on, flashing brightly in your mirrors as it tails you too closely, no matter how quickly you go or what maneuvers you make. It stays with you, attempting to run you off the road before it suddenly vanishes. Drivers on this stretch have also reported encountering a black semi-truck that barrels down the highway at high speeds, also seemingly intent on running others off the road. Many tales of this vehicle say that it is driverless. That's what they report. However, some accounts describe a demonic figure behind its wheel. How fun is that? Now, the Devil's Highway, as it's, you know, lovingly referred to, does continue to produce a high number of strange occurrences and very chilling accounts from both truckers and regular drivers alike, name change or no. Even though these ghost cars sound very much like urban legend, let's be real. Simply because of the areas that it runs through, I'm not entirely convinced that these ghost automobile accounts are total fiction. So the entire route, it runs from Utah to New Mexico. However, the prevalence of occurrences and fatalities have occurred in the New Mexico stretch. Nothing but desert and a lone straight expanse of highway until you reach Gallup. I mean, can you imagine just the UFO encounters alone in that area? I can imagine just how, I don't know, just creepy that would be driving it in the middle of the night. Not all accounts are this urban legendy or dramatic, though. There are a few online threads dedicated to ghost cars and numerous personal accounts of having encountered them. And many of these witnesses are skeptical of what they witnessed, though they don't quite know how to explain it any other way. So I've seen a lot of similarities with a few of these accounts. You can have a car come up behind you, brights on, then suddenly it's like they're just gone. Or a car comes up behind you, goes around you. You follow it for a while before it goes over a rise or takes a turn in the road. Yet when you get there, when the driver gets there, there's suddenly no trace of the vehicle, no driveways, no turnoffs, nowhere it could have gone, but gone it did. There is a very spooky twist on this with a story by Reddit user MyFakeName68, who told a story of a drive that them and their dad was on. They were driving through some tree-lined back road during a severe snowstorm. Okay, dad's driving. He's going super slow because they're the only ones on these roads at this time, and there weren't any tracks yet in the snow to follow. So he's driving real cautiously. Suddenly, this car pulls up behind them, just out of nowhere. Brights are on, tails them for a while before swinging around and going to pass them. And the user described the car as a vintage muscle car. And they said as the car passed, three occupants were visible as if the car were lit from within, which is an interesting detail and for sure something that I have seen in other stories too. So this muscle car gets in front of them. And now the dad's like, awesome. I mean, you know, these guys are totally shitty and they're going to get in a wreck, but awesome. Now I have tracks laid down for me in the snow to follow. So the car gets like 50 feet ahead of them on this fairly straight stretch, disappears over a rise in the road, and the user and their father, still fairly close behind, get to the rise. There's no sign of the car. There are no turnoffs, no signs of a wreck, and the tracks in the snow just stop. The submitting writer said that they just vanished at the rise. Another interesting similarity that I'm seeing with quite a few of these stories, the ghost cars are indeed often older models, like that vintage muscle car, or like the Roadster on Route 666. It's something that these witnesses take notice of. I found that an interesting pattern to the phenomenon. I mean, if we're talking about ghosts or residual activity, that would make more sense. Some folks have described interactions with ghost cars that appear out of nowhere, or are just there around a corner, and the driver seems to run into them, but then the car is just gone, and there's no evidence of a collision. We see that with some accounts of ghost trains as well. My mom had a weird experience like this back in her youth. I found it to be more like glitch in the matrix than ghostly, as the other driver was totally alive and was just as confused as she was. I've told that story on the show before. Let me know if you want to hear it again. I will totally tell it again. Now, there are some very strange outlier stories too. These might be more accurately described as time slips or like psychic related, but one really fascinating story was submitted by Super Ninja, also took place at night during a snowstorm. They watched as this small gray hatchback passed them in the opposite lane, and in their mirror, they watched this car go off the road, hit the embankment, and launch into the air. As it turned over, sure to land on its roof, the makings of a terrible, terrible, awful wreck. The driver pulled over and runs to check and see if they can help because, you know, they are a good person. That's what good people do. There's nothing there. No car, no sounds, no sizzle, no lights, no wreck. Even so, because they are sure of what they saw, they call 911. The police and ambulance arrive. Everyone is searching for this wrecked vehicle. Nothing is found. Now, here is where it gets into a ghost car meets something else entirely. So the following week, the driver is going through the same area, sees one of those white crosses on the side of the road at the spot that they watched this car go off. And they check the date on the cross. It is dated for the day after they saw the wreck. They go home to look up the accident. A teenage girl driving her gray hatchback had indeed lost control of her car, went off the road, launched off the embankment, landed on her roof, and she died immediately. They confirmed that this accident took place the night after this driver watched it happen. An experience like that might make a lot of sense if we consider time as a multi-layered, non-singular, non-linear concept. The idea that everything is happening all at once. You know, did they see the ghost car of a wreck that had yet to happen? Did they just get a glimpse into the future? Did timelines cross? I don't know. I really don't know. It's a crazy, crazy good story, though. All right. Now, here is one that you might have heard about. It was in the news, but it is so intriguing that I'm going to retell it. This is one of the most ghostly ghost cars that I've ever heard of. This took place in Surrey, England, more than two decades ago. It is still unexplained. On December 11th, 2002, around 7 p.m., a bunch of drivers on the A3 began flooding the police lines to report a car they witnessed, with headlights on bright, swerving off the road and disappearing down the embankment. When the police arrived, the underbrush was incredibly thick and undisturbed. There was no evidence whatsoever of a freshly crashed vehicle, so, at first, they did not see the car. Going a little deeper in, though, they found it. A maroon Vauxhall Astra, nose-ended into the ditch, completely hidden from street view, completely hidden to passers-by. Upon further investigation, they found the body of the driver nearby. Police confirmed it to be that of 21-year-old Christopher Brian Chandler, wanted for robbery and on the run from police since July 16th of that year. The car was rusty, the body decomposing. They realized this was no recent accident and estimated it had to have happened 5 months prior to discovery, in July, when Christopher first went on the run. It is unclear why this particular date in December was when everyone witnessed this wreck replaying. But what is clear is that multiple drivers saw the same crash 5 months after it happened. So crazy, right? All right, we are going to move on to ghost planes, and we will be closing it out with a few honorable mentions. But if you have a particular interest in ghost cars, like I do, or you have any questions, I have shared some excellent threads that you should totally check out, including one started by Jeep Dave, who is a longtime trucker. He sees phantom vehicles all of the time, and he's gotten really, really good at spotting them. And he did start an Ask Me Anything thread on Reddit a while ago, so I do think it's closed to new comments now, but there's still some really, really great stories and info about the ghost car phenomenon in there, so check it out. All right, ghost planes. Ghost planes provided a rather interesting and spooky line of research. We have planes that are themselves haunted, whether by entities or the machine itself, a la Stephen King's Christine. We also have ones whose parts carry ghostly energy wherever they go. One of the most famous of all plane-connected hauntings revolve around Flight 401. Following its crash, parts from this plane were used as replacement parts on other planes, and crews working on those flights began reporting encounters with the deceased pilots of 401, who would appear, leave a warning about impending fire or mechanical issues, and then just disappear just as quickly. There are numerous personal accounts from passengers and crew alike who have had ghostly experiences on a plane, and many planes, surprisingly, are considered haunted. And you've most likely ridden on one without a care in the world, without a thought behind them eyes. But are there actual ghost planes, ones that have long since been decommissioned or dismantled, that are seen in the skies, or have no business and no record of being in the area that they are spotted, leaving many to wonder what exactly did they just see? American author, screenwriter, and authority on aeronautics and aviation, Martin Kaden, penned more than 50 books and 1,000 articles in his lifetime covering topics that ranged from future technological advances, World War II, space travel, aviation, and things more unusual, things paranormal. His best-known novel, Cyborg, was the basis of which the $6 Million Man franchise was born. That has literally zero to do with what we are about to talk about, but so friggin' cool, dude. He was a gangsta. He was also a pilot, and being in that world already had an in when it came time to write what I think is a book that was completely ahead of its time. It was called Ghosts of the Air, and it was published in 1991. This book recounts stories from pilots about unexplainable occurrences that they had while in the air and on the tarmac. And having just gone through the whirlwind circus of congressional hearings about UAP, it was a stark reminder of just how hard it is in the modern day to squeeze these kinds of strange experiences out of pilots due to fear of ridicule and demotion and controversy, let alone back in the early 90s. But squeeze he did, and spill the tea, they did. There is an absolutely incredible story that he relays that takes place over the span of a half a century. On the beautiful spring day that was May 27th, 1963, one of the most well-known figures of aviation in the United Kingdom at the time, Sir Peter Masefield, flew his single-engine, low-winged monoplane gracefully along the Scottish shoreline. As he approached the long-since abandoned airfield that was once the Royal Air Force Station Montrose and was reborn into an expansive and beautiful golf course, he looked forward to seeing the field he once had known so well when he'd flown there. Cruising at 2,500 feet, he soon saw the old familiar runways, and something else took shape ahead of him. Flying at his same altitude was a biplane, but not just any biplane, a 70-horsepower BE-2 trainer. It was an ancient machine originally used by the Royal Flying Corps before World War I. He pulled alongside the biplane enough that when he looked over, he could make out the pilot wearing what would have been appropriate wear for pilots around World War I, a leather helmet, goggles, and flying scarf. Sir Masefield marveled at what had to have been a rebuilt machine, as he had not heard of anyone that had been able to get one of these dinosaurs back up in the air. His admiration was cut short as tragedy suddenly intervened. Everything happened so quickly. Masefield watched in helpless horror as the upper right wing of this biplane broke from the structure and began flapping about. The entire right upper wing wrenched free of its strut supports. The BE-2 began whirling out of control, spinning, twisting, literally crumpled, and falling apart in front of Masefield's eyes and plummeting rapidly downward toward the old airfield. As he swerved toward Montrose himself to make a sudden and unexpected landing, Masefield watched as the plane hit the ground, watched as dust and dirt were thrown up in the collision. He landed safely on the green and tore from his plane, yelling to a few straggling players, mouths agape, to help him. A plane had crashed. They needed to get to the pilot. But they hesitated. They were confused. They hadn't seen a plane go down. Masefield insisted, and finally they hurried across the green to where he'd seen the crash, but stopped short. There were no plane pieces, no plane, no scorched earth, no wreck at all. I can only imagine the sudden distortion in Masefield's reality during and after this event, trying to make sense of what he had seen, but also hadn't seen. He would have felt so much better, I am sure, at least to know that he wasn't crazy, if someone had just informed him that in the final years of an active training facility before the aerodrome had closed, Montrose had a ghost. The Montrose ghost was spotted numerous times walking in full flight attire and gear to his old home in Mess 2, only to vanish before entering. He had scared many trainees and officers who woke to see him in their rooms in the middle of the night. Newbies and senior officials alike had seen and were well aware of their ghost. Though it would be a few years before the Montrose ghost was identified, the men would finally put two and two together. Their ghost's name was Desmond Arthur, and Masefield had just encountered him in the sky. Lieutenant Desmond L. Arthur had been made a certified pilot and been posted to Montrose, following a standard test flight over the field at 4,000 feet, in graceful, gentle curves and expert maneuvers, his BE-2 biplane began its descent. In a wide and gentle turn, now at 2,500 feet, his upper right wing suddenly, without warning, snapped. When the struts cracked free, the wing tore upward. The plane collapsed. He had no lift, no control, and he tumbled to the ground. The original report notes that the tumbling and jerking were so intense, his seatbelt snapped and he was separated from his plane to free fall wildly alongside it all the way down. He died instantly upon impact. Investigation following the crash uncovered unauthorized repair by a mechanic had left an uncorrected broken spar that was covered up by material, concealing it from the pilot, and it was never logged. It was an unfortunate and quite unnecessary death, one that took place on May 27th, 1913. 50 years prior to the day that Sir Peter Masefield would pull up alongside him before witnessing the replay of his untimely demise. There was no plane, you guys. No crash site. Someone explain. Masefield was not alone in witnessing machines long past their prime in the skies in areas that they just should not be. More recently, in the 1990s, a spat of sightings took place near Derbyshire, England. In 1995, Tony Ingle was walking his golden retriever in the Peak District. He was surprised when he looked above him as a very old, propellered wartime plane without a sound flew close overhead, attempting to bank and then go down just over a large hedge. Thinking the worst, Tony ran up the lane, came around the hedge, and saw absolutely nothing. Only a field full of sheep, unbothered and grazing. No crash and no sign whatsoever of this mysterious plane. In an interview about his sighting, he described the moment thus. Everything was silent. You could hear a pin drop. The best way I can describe it was as if someone had died. It was terrible, a very eerie sensation. Following this event, he would return to the area many times, but said that his dog refused to step foot anywhere near the field ever again. The mountains in the Peak District had claimed the lives of more than 200 pilots and crew since World War II at that time, contributing to local folklore and dozens of reports describing ghost planes and ghost plane crashes would come out of that specific area. The general descriptions of these planes included them being large, prop-driven machines of Second World War vintage, making no noise, and many vanishing before witnesses' eyes or leading them to think that they had crashed. But mysteriously enough, no evidence of a crash in any of these reports was ever found. Some of these antique models had been rebuilt and were flight-worthy at the time. However, it was often confirmed either none were airborne at the time of the sightings, or they were airborne, but enough miles away that it would have been impossible for these to have been the planes that were seen. To end our segment on ghost planes, I wanted to share one more story from Caden's book. This is a strange one, and it's very reminiscent of our ghost car seen before it crashed. But even far stranger than that, if you can believe it. On the crisp, clear morning of October 10th, 1967, 23-year-old student pilot Don Cochran was on his third aerobatic training flight with his instructor, who sat behind him in the tandem-seated T-2B. Multiple planes were in the air that morning, but because aerobatic training reserved entire sectors for just one plane, Don and his teacher were essentially alone in their area of the Naval Air Station Meridian. He would say visibility was perfect, crystal clear. He was locked and ready, as any student pilot in this training mode would be, to pay attention to every little detail. Don asked his instructor for permission to begin the next assigned maneuver, a high loop. In preparation for this move, you look and clear right, you look and clear left, you look up, you look down, you look everywhere, because you need to be certain your area is entirely clear. He looked to his right, and when he looked to his left, tucked in closely to his own aircraft was another T-2B. This one also had a student in the front and an instructor in the back. Don noted the nose numbers and froze. So strange, because they matched his own plane's numbers. And the Navy didn't put identical numbers on separate aircraft. The other plane was in a shallow bank. Everything was crystal clear. And as Don stared out his canopy into the other cockpit, he watched as the student pilot made eye contact and gave Don a wave. The realization was sudden and sinking. Don was staring at himself. The other plane suddenly banked hard left and rolled away. Shaken, Don glanced away briefly. When he looked back, the other plane was just gone. His eyes darted everywhere, but it had vanished. Don would ask his instructor if he'd noticed anything while they cleared. He said he hadn't. Back on the ground, Don asked the crew in the operations control room how many planes had been up at the same time. Only three, they told him, all of which were accounted for in their separate areas, the closest being miles away. No one was anywhere near Don and his instructor. Of his experience, Don would say he couldn't explain it, but he was convinced of what he saw. And what he saw was him. Thank you guys so much for joining me on this one. We will spend our final moments together quickly running through some honorable mention ghost vehicles that I came across in this research. The Old Trace Road is a historic path running through Monroe County in Kentucky. Once upon a time, it had been a trail of deep ruts etched into the earth, created by early wagon trains passing through the area from the late 1700s to early 1800s. Since those days, new roads had been put in to replace and cover old sections. But the original route may still reserve space and energy to those original pioneers and frontiersmen who made the difficult trek so long ago. One of the first reports claiming to see a wagon train traveling Old Trace comes from the early 1900s from a young boy named Zeke Bray. 12-year-old Zeke busied himself fixing the barnyard fence in the heat of the summer day. He stopped hammering suddenly when he heard what sounded like shouting. His attention turned toward the road that ran alongside his family's property, and he watched in amazement as a train of very old-looking wagons rolled along the road. Whips cracked, babies cried, women and children jostled about in the wagons and at the reins. Men walked steadily alongside them. A cloud of dust kicked up in these wagons' wake. As strange as this sight may have been, Zeke realized something far stranger. The wagons seemed to move of their own accord. Not one oxen or mule could be seen pulling them. He watched the train as it rolled by, and then it disappeared, and things grew quiet once more. Zeke would actually become a preacher later on and would tell the story of the covered wagon train many, many times. And this story comes from the book Ghosts Across Kentucky, written by William Montell, who would end up hearing similar stories from residents in the area. A man named Jack Miller was just dozing off to sleep when he heard what sounded like voices, many voices. He listened for a moment before realizing it was growing louder, closer. It was so late, and he lived in a fairly spacious, remote area. What the heck could that be? He sat up in bed and looked out the window. The moonlight was incredibly bright, and the source of the sound was easy to spot. A covered wagon train rolled through his cornfield in the direction of his house. Whips snapped, wheels creaked, people rode in the wagons while others walked alongside. But there didn't seem to be an animal in sight to pull these wagons. How strange. A detail he was definitely about to confirm as the wagon train began coming through his wall and rolling right through his bedroom. Later research confirmed that his house, in fact, was situated right over the original path of the Old Trace Road. The author shared one more account that he heard firsthand from a man living along the old path of Old Trace Road in just the next county over. And this man reported that several times he'd seen them, a string of covered wagons all in a line with people in them rolling right through his home. A legend told for generations in Franklin County, Florida, is that of the ghost hearse of Bloody Bluff Cemetery. In the 1960s, while transporting a body for burial, a hearse ran off the road and wrecked, killing the driver. Or so they say. It's thought you might still encounter this hearse today, and it sounds like either the driver or the hearse itself has a bone to pick with the living. Those brave enough to wait, parked on the railroad tracks nearby the cemetery at 3:30 a.m., will soon see a long black hearse pull up behind them, flashing its brights. If you start to drive, the hearse follows, closely, flashing its brights the whole way as it tries to run you from the road to join it in the afterlife. If you can reach the cemetery, you're in the clear, as that is when the tailgating hearse will suddenly vanish. That's fun. That's a fun game. All right. The following account can be found in Brad Steiger's book, Real Ghosts, Restless Spirits, and Haunted Places. In 1924, Inez M. found herself and four companions stalled and stuck in the heavy and brutal Midwest snow outside Embarrass, Minnesota. They busied themselves shoveling out the snow around their vehicle. Suddenly, they were interrupted when a wagon load of hay pulled by a team of horses and ridden by two men quickly approached them on the narrow road. Not seeming to take any notice of the stranded strangers, or the snow, the wagon rode right up on the group, forcing them apart, with Inez jumping to one side of the road and her friend Martha to the other. Bewildered, they watched this wagon pull right up between them, and as quickly as it appeared, vanished into thin air, leaving Inez and Martha staring at each other across the road. Looking down, there were no tracks and no evidence the wagon had ever been there. A very strange account of a ghost vehicle was submitted to Ron's Amazing Stories. He runs both a blog and a podcast to share, amazing stories. So this amazing story took place when the writer was a teenager in the late 80s. And she said her and her dad were backed up in a line of traffic on their way to a dune buggy event ever so slowly, as cars ahead of them were passing whoever was holding up traffic. They inched their way forward until they reached it. It was a tractor doing Mach negative 200, as tractors are wont to do. So they edge up to it, go to pass it, and looking over to see who is driving this thing, are shocked to see no one is in the cab. What was so strange about this self-driving tractor, which, you know, at the time the story took place, there were no self-driving tractors, but what was so strange is that somehow this tractor had managed to remain on the road, curves, turns, and all. So, the writer's dad passes the tractor, and up ahead, around another curve in the road, finds a place to pull over. His intention being to catch this rogue farm equipment. It's moving slow enough so you can get up on him and, like, stop it. So he's going to catch it and bring it to a stop safely, pull it off the road. But the writer says the tractor never came around the turn. They waited. It never arrived. So for the event that they were going to, they had brought a motorcycle along with them. And Dad pulls it off the trailer, heads back around the turn, returns a few minutes later. There's no tractor to be seen and no signs that it has run off the road, which, you know, if you are familiar with rolling farm equipment, you'll know it's very, very easy to see their tracks in the dirt should one do something like meander away from the road. They super heavy pieces of machinery, guys. All right, next one. May 31st, 1886, a tour group was headed across Lake Tarawera to visit the scenic wonder that was the Pink and White Terraces. All occupants on the tour boat would report seeing a Maori war canoe. A double row of occupants were seen on board, some to paddle, some to stand, all staring intently up at Mount Tarawera as they swiftly glided toward it. Some of the occupants wore huia and white heron feathers in their hair. These were traditional for marking death. The guide of the tour boat called out to the canoe, but no one responded as they continued rowing toward the mountain, and soon they entirely disappeared into the mist. Something the tourists at the time weren't aware of, but locals were, this type of vessel, this war canoe, had never existed in this area. When told of the sighting back on shore, the Tahunga priest knew instantly what this meant. It was a portent of disaster, and they were about to see it. 11 days later, Mount Tarawera erupted. Three surrounding villages were annihilated, 150 people died, and the beautiful and beloved pink and white terraces were destroyed. The multiple recorded accounts of the sighting of this ghost canoe make it more than simply legend, you know? And some locals today believe that any future eruption of Mount Tarawera will be signaled by the reappearance of this boat. All right, final one for you, and then we're gonna wrap it up. While this one, it doesn't specifically describe or designate the ghostly transport, it's implied, okay? Also, it ties in with a subject that we've already covered. This account was included in the paper by Peter Sudfeld and John Geiger that I referenced in our look at the third man factor. One of the only malevolent sensed presence experiences the writers found, maybe even the only one on official record, took place one year during the Yukon Quest. A dog sled racer participating in the race named Bill Stewart was just 40 miles from the finish line. But then, as we learned in that episode, due to extreme conditions, extreme fatigue, sometimes folks start to see things and people that are not there. Or are they? A fellow racer suddenly appeared to him. This fellow racer was not the real fellow racer. "Hey, you're going the wrong way," he says. Stewart, thankful for the heads up, aptly turns his team around and started going the wrong way, really this time, for 4 hours. At this point, he encountered another fellow racer, this one real, who said, "Hey, you're going the wrong way, buddy." Stewart then turned his team back around and began again to head toward the finish line. But once again, he encountered a fellow racer, a man who wasn't even in the race this year. "Hey, there's a hotel right over there. Go get you a room." The exhausted Stewart pulled his dogs off, hopped off his sled, and walked into the center of a snow-covered meadow. Unable to find the hotel, he laid down in the snow to catch a wink and promptly fell asleep as he hadn't slept in 2 days. It was minus 25 degrees. Luckily for him, a fellow racer, this one real, came upon this point in the trail, took notice of Stewart laying out in the middle of the field, and saved the day of what surely would have been a very tragic event in this race. If you've given any thought to the third man factor and pondered causes outside of the accepted psychological explanations behind these very strange encounters, this example might apply as something a bit more ghostly, maybe paranormal, definitely mysterious, which would mean we have at least one example on record of a phantom dog sled. That's all I got for you today. Send your thoughts to paranormgirlpod@gmail.com or follow and message me at paranormgirlpod on social. I was live just this last Saturday on Beer, Booze, and Boogeymen. Catch the replay on YouTube of our presentation of Red, White, and Cryptid. Had some pretty awesome submissions, you guys. Go give the show a sub while you're over there, and be sure to catch next month's broadcast on August 2nd. We are talking sleep paralysis experiences. Woo! Some spooky stuff, dude. Share the show with your friends. And if you've got a great sleep paralysis tale to tell, we would love to hear it and share it. So plan to call in live, or you can message us beforehand with your story, whatever you want to do. All contact info can be found below in the notes. That is it, you guys. Have a great week, and I will see you guys back here in 2 weeks. Before we close, we are seriously getting very, very close to the end of the season, so don't miss the next couple of episodes. And if you have fallen behind, now's a great time to get all caught up in preparation for our final conclusion on Ghosts and Hauntings. Can you believe it? I can't believe it. We have spent a year pulling it all apart. Tis time to put it back together again during PGP's season wrap-up and finale. I don't know how we're going to put it all together, but we do every season. We just cram it all back together, and it makes sense. It works. On the finale, we'll also probably be making the announcement of next season's subject. I'm considering doing a little competition beforehand and letting you guys vote and decide on what that subject is going to be. So let me think about it for a little bit, and I'll come up with something fun for us all to participate in the choosing of next season's subject. But yes, the finale is when I'll be making that announcement. These finales, always a good time, always worth the celebration, for me at least, because it means I'm done. And I did the job I set out to do, y'all. And it also means I get to start prepping for something totally different. Oh, I am so excited. I love ghosts. I love hauntings. I love the subject. But, you know, by the time these season finales roll around, I'm usually itching to get into something totally brand new. So totally excited, you guys. All right. Take care. Take care of yourselves. And I'll see you back here in a couple of weeks. Until then, stay safe. Keep the nightlight on. And sleep with one eye open.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.